Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love, sponsored by the D.D. Jackson Foundation. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. I am TJ Jackson, and with me I have Taj and Terrell Jackson.
What's going on?
You guys?
What's going on?
And Royal Jackson. Royal?
So, Royal's mic-less right now.
Royal's mic-less right now, so he's
and,
not...
And headphone-less. That's
what I laughed at. So he's here, though. It doesn't matter. He's here.
He's in the house.
He's here, we're here, and you're here. So we are live on the Power of Love show. If you're listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. Later on in the show, we are going to open up phone lines. Maybe. We definitely have Twitter open all day. If you want to share any comments, questions, any posts, any statistics, please do so on Twitter. That handle is at DDJ Foundation. Again, it's at DDJ Foundation. And I'm going to go straight into the disclaimer. We are not licensed therapists. We're just ordinary people who've experienced loss in our lives. We've been impacted by it, and we've learned from it. And we want to share our opinions and attempt to help you overcome whatever it is you're going through. Saying that, if you need professional help, we urge you to seek it and to find it. Do not just rely on us. I'm going to go straight into it. How was your guys' day? Taj? Or week? Day? Taj?
Yeah,
Terrell?
I would say days. Week was good. I had a opening day with Bryce and Adrian.
Yeah, how was that?
It was, we didn't know if we were going to get rained out
for baseball.
Not. For baseball. Okay. It was fine, though. Adrian's games don't really count. They don't keep score. And Bryce, his game was just a practice game.
Okay.
So he was actually supposed to have opening day the week before.
But the rain.
And he was going to miss it. So because of the Beauty and the Beast. So I was actually happy that we got rained out then. So he was able to make the first one.
Good.
And that was good. And then we had a game on Monday, and it doesn't matter. We lost, but it was good.
Good. Okay. Good.
We're going to be all right. We have a good team.
I like that.
Yeah.
Taj, anything for your week?
Didn't we celebrate your kid's birthday party?
Oh, yeah. That happened as well.
I cheated. I looked, you know. But yeah.
That was on Friday.
That was Friday.
Yeah, we had the party.
And their birthdays are early.
My microphone sounds weird to me.
Yeah.
Does it?
A little bit to me.
See, now you know how it feels.
No. It's got EQ on it.
It's okay.
Give me some bass, man. Why are you robbing the bass? I barely have any bass in my voice.
If you want, I could talk to Taj. You can walk over here and engineer yourself some bass if you want.
Yeah, you rolled off my low end, man. I don't like that.
Taj, how was your week?
It was great. So, yeah, Bryce and Adrian had a birthday party, which is fun. And what else did we do? Oh, we had a charity softball game, but we'll not talk about that.
Yeah, it's up to you.
I mean, I don't know what we're allowed to say, but it was a fun game.
You're probably right, Taj. We probably shouldn't talk about it, but we did do a charity softball game, which is a lot of fun with family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we will talk about it at a future date. That's the best way to say it. But like you said, we had Bryce and Adrian's birthday.
Yep.
Rio, my son, my youngest, turned 3.
All right, Rio.
Saturday. So we did a little thing for him. That was the rest of my week. Not much more excitement than that. Royal, anything for your week?
Royal, anything for your week? Did I pass the mic to him?
Come on, son.
Make up.
Not all day.
No.
Okay.
Nothing special.
So another wonderful week in the Jackson family. There you go.
That's our next album, Nothing Special.
All right. So let's go straight into it because we have an awesome guest today whose story is very unique. Very, very unique is just the best way to say it.
Yeah.
With us today, we have D Breezy. We have Mr. Nick D Breezy. How are you, Nick?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm really happy to be here with you guys.
Nice.
Yes, we're happy to have you.
You don't have to say Mr. Nick D Breezy. It sounds a little too...
Make him say it. make him a too give formal. You respect.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Hey, I don't really respect these guys.
Oh,
so when someone I comes in that I do have somewhat respect for, you get all the accolades.
I appreciate that, man.
All
that's
right?
Awesome.
So, Nick, you are 36 years old. Yeah. From Chicago, Illinois.
Chi-town.
Yep. Chi-town.
Representing. Yep.
Our family's from close to Chicago. but we're not from Chicago.
Gary. I have cousins. They just told me to tell you guys. You have cousins, Gary. Make sure they know.
Really? So, you have cousins in Gary? Yeah,
they're there now. Oh. They were from Chicago. They moved to Gary.
Cool. We got cousins
Marmos. In Gary too. The Marmos.
Cool, man. Yeah. Anyway, you are the youngest of three boys.
Yes, I am.
A great, great prestigious spot. Coming from the youngest of us three boys. And your parents are from Italy.
Yeah.
What else should we know about your background before we get into your story?
Yeah, I grew up, my parents are from Italy, and I grew up, my summers were spent in Italy, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you speak Italian?
I do. I speak.
You do?
Well, it's a dialect. It's a southern Italian dialect. Like a Neapolitan dialect, you know, we're like about an hour and a half south of Naples. So, I spent my summers living on a farm in Italy.
Great.
Like, we had a farm.
Very
good. We still
do,
actually.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
And part of my story was me being able to go back for the first time in 19 years back this summer.
Wow.
That was going to be a question of mine.
Yeah.
Have you been back?
Yeah. Well, sorry about that.
No, I mean.
Yeah. So, Nick, you are living with cystic fibrosis.
That's right.
CF. I said that right, Nick?
You did say
I want
right.
to make sure.
Cystic fibrosis, yep.
For our listeners and my brothers, mm-hmm. and even myself,
right.
I know a bit about it, but can you tell us what cystic fibrosis is?
Sure. Basically, cystic fibrosis is a genetic condition. It affects about 30,000 people in the USA. It predominantly affects the lungs. Your body is constantly creating mucus in your organs. The reason it affects the lungs mostly is because with mucus in the lungs, you can't breathe. So if you can imagine living with, I don't know if anyone's ever had like a bronchitis. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like every day of our lives, mm-hmm. you know. And as you get older, it progressively gets worse. That mucus causes infection. Infections cause scar tissue, and then you're hospitalized for IV antibiotics. So I spent my life every year going in for what we call tune-ups. You know, like when you tune up a car, similar. 2 weeks at a time in the hospital getting a tune-up, or if I got sick or infections with fevers, you have to go in and get IV antibiotics.
So your life has been in and out of hospital.
In and out. I've probably been hospitalized. I mean, I'm 36. I would say over 100 times.
Wow.
Yeah, easily. I've spent probably 3 years of my life in the hospital, if you like add it all up. You know,
you know what I love about you too, Nick, is that you're a very upbeat, positive person.
You have to be. I mean, not only do I have cystic fibrosis, I'm also diabetic, you know. I had osteoporosis, you know, I had hypertension of the heart. There's a lot of issues that coincide with it. And if you go into this battle, because it's a battle every day. I mean, it's a fight every day to just breathe. And you have a negative, you know, outlook, you're going to lose. I mean, it's as simple as that. Mm. You have to stay positive. That was instilled in me by my parents, instilled in me by my brothers. You know, I grew up, like I said, two older brothers, very competitive nature. Mm-hmm. So if somebody told me I couldn't do it, I would try to prove them wrong.
That's right.
And I was told a lot of that. Like, you know, like the coach would take you out. Oh, you're going to get tired. You're going to get sick. No, I want to go in. Yeah. I want to score goals. I'm going to score bad. I'm good.
Yeah.
Just trust in me, you know. Yeah. If I want to come out, I'll let you know, you know.
So cystic fibrosis, you already mentioned 30,000 cases, roughly 30,000 cases in the U.S., roughly 70,000 worldwide.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
That's about right. Yeah.
And it's something you were born with.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's genetic. So
okay.
Nobody in my family has it, but both of my parents were carriers of the gene, and therefore I was the lucky one. You know, 25% chance of getting it. And both of my brothers, thank God, knock on wood, are healthy enough. You know.
For you to have gotten CF, did both of your parents have to be carriers?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You have to be recessive carrier genes.
Wow.
And, yeah, so that in order for, you know, it's like my brother, I think my brother Dominic, you can find out now through testing if you're a carrier.
Okay.
And I believe my brother is a carrier, but his wife wasn't.
Okay. So his kids.
So his kids may be carriers, you know. I think one out of four. If one's a carrier and one's not, you got to do the Punnett square. Is that what it's called?
Well, we have a high school student in here.
Well, help us out.
He's looking pretty shocked. But okay. So then you said, as you mentioned, you got diabetes and you got it at 10 years old.
10 years old. I'm insulin dependent, diabetic, at 10 years old. And I have an insulin pump, and I also have a continuous monitoring system. So I have two things that are like constantly on my body, but it's been like life-saving for me, like life-changing. It's really helped me control my diabetes.
Right.
It's very important because I'm type 1. So I used to inject myself four times a day.
Yeah, and that was tough for you.
That's a pain in the neck. I mean, think about it. At 10 years old, that was probably one of the most devastating moments of my life. I mean, at 10 years old, a doctor comes in and says, you know, Nick, unfortunately, your sugar was almost 800. And I'm like, what do you mean? What does that mean? You know, well, we will put you on prednisone for the inflammation of the lungs, and it caused you to have diabetes. It triggered the diabetes. So you're going to have to inject yourself for the rest of your life. And they're not very tactful about it.
No.
They straight up tell you. I mean, and they have to, you know.
Yeah.
And at 10 years old, that's like, I mean, what? How am I going to do that? Like,
yeah.
So for years, until about 3 years ago, I was injecting myself, you know, anywhere from 2 to 4 times a day.
When you were growing up, I know activity and fitness was a huge role in your lifestyle. Was that just because, or was it because of your condition, your parents wanted you to be very active?
I have to give that to my parents. I mean, from an early age, and by the way, in the 80s, I'm born in 1981, when I was diagnosed, my doctors told my father and mother, and imagine, they're just, you know, from another country, they're just learning American way, and like, they're hustling, they're working. My father had restaurants, and my mom worked with him. I was raised kind of by my grandparents at the same time. And they told them that your son's not going to live past his teens. You know, that was the life expectancy then.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot of hope. But yet...
Back then. You were supposed to only survive to your teens.
Yeah. And my parents said, you know what? No matter what, we're going to keep him as active and as involved as the other kids. You know? And I mean, it's just like, I guess it's... I don't know if it's an Italian thing or a Chicago. It's a combination. Growing up in like the Chicago sports era, you just get competitive, man. Like, I'm very competitive. You know, I never wanted my brothers to be able to beat me because of a disease, you know.
Would you say, Nick, your parents treated you almost exactly the same as your brothers?
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways. But, I mean, at the same time, you had to be careful about certain things. There was like, I mean, I had to grow up fast, you know. I had to take my nebulizer treatments, you know, 3 times a day. We had to do physiotherapy. At the time, now we have like a vest that does it for itself. But at the time, my mother, my grandma used to cup their hands and like beat on my back for like at least 20, 30 minutes so I could spit mucus out.
At what age?
I mean, all my life that I remember, like even 3, 4 years old, you know, like it was something
that was just part of your life.
Part of your life. Like every day I had to do that. And I knew that. And I had to be home after school and go straight to the nebulizer around 3:30. So like, you know, when kids were going out having fun, I had to be home at a certain time. So it definitely forced me to stay home more.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it may have kept me out of trouble because there was a lot of guys that got in trouble around me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so it was good in a way. But, you know, and that's just how I am. I look at the life as, you know, the cup. For some people say it's half empty. Some people say it's half full. My cup has free refills. That's what I say.
That's great.
Really cool. Never heard
I like
of
that.
Nick, the other thing I want to say before I let my brothers open up some questions. I got to start the show off right, so I got to ask the questions. you know what? I said it to you already. You're very positive. As you said, you like your cups have free refills. When you were young, I assume you were very positive, upbeat, had tough moments. I think, why other kids get to do this, I can't.
Right.
When you were diagnosed with diabetes at 10, did you go through like a period of, I want to give up my life?
Without a doubt. I've gone through that period numerous times in my life, you know. You think about it, and it's like, why me? You know, you question that, of course. You know, and then especially when you have things planned and you see other people being able to go out and do things, and that should have been me. I should have been able to do that too. Or I can't go out like the other kids, you know. Stay home more. Or I got to be home at a certain time. Of course. I mean, as a kid, absolutely. And even as an adult, when I started to get a lot sicker, and it was a point where I was on, you know, oxygen 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure we'll talk, get to that.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, oh, dude, this is it, man. Like, and I would get in that mindset sometimes, and then I would force myself out of it because for me, it was a matter of looking around me and realizing how much I had. Like, I mean, even being sick, there's always someone who has it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I mean, you can complain that, you know, for instance, you don't have the money to buy a pair of new shoes until you meet the guy with no feet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then it's like, just shut your mouth because there's people that have it worse. And even me, I looked at life like that.
Yeah.
Even though I had it pretty bad.
That's gratitude. I love it.
Yeah.
Then in 2002, you moved to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
What spurred that decision?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I never wanted my disease to dictate my life. And that's why I always say, fight like a boss. I'm the boss of my life, you know. And I wanted to pursue a career in acting. So I moved here in 2002. I got an agent in an acting competition in New York. I won, like, Best Comedic Monologue. I was nominated for Best Actor of that competition. The agent signed with me. That's what made me move here. I was 20 years old, man. It's like, I didn't know anything. I thought I knew. I thought I knew everything, but I really didn't know shit. Excuse me. Sorry, guys. So then I became a real estate agent. I got my real estate license.
Yeah.
And I did both things, you know, throughout my life. And, of course, there were times where I couldn't because I was on disability and whatnot. And, you know, there were times I was in the hospital. So, but that's basically what I did, you know.
And then at 21, and by the way, we got to give some, you got some nice little credits from acting, too.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, I
got CSI. Some, and
yeah, CSI New York.
And iCarly.
Yeah, Mixology. I did a few movies, cool. A bunch of commercials.
What was your favorite experience in acting so far?
Well, I think the CSI New York was really, it was really cool.
What was your role in it? What did you?
I played Paul Montanassi. I always get killed, guys, and everything I do. I'm kind of like a mobster in most stuff. Yeah. You know?
I get that.
So they're a very character role, but I got whacked out in that one too.
That's cool.
They found my body beaten by a baseball bat in the snow.
Okay.
By my buddy Mike DeLuise, actually. Shout out to Mike. So it was cool though. It was like a whole
good,
week. Yeah.
Good little experience.
I liked the show, you know. So yeah, I was so excited about that.
Excited
yeah,
be
yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The beating isn't cool. But
no. Nobody wants to get beaten by a baseball bat.
Let's clarify that.
Paul Montanazzi, I was a Tanglewood boy. That's what it was. So.
Cool. And then at 21, though, your lung function dropped to 25%.
Right.
Did I say the terminology?
Yeah. It's FEV1 is considered the overall lung function.
Okay.
So mine dropped to 25%, and at that time I was still boxing. You know, I was still exercising, and I'm thinking to myself like, wow, my lung function's low, but it always has been. But these doctors now, when it got to that point, I remember the nurse practitioner coming in, and she's like, "Look, you only have with this lung function, you should be on oxygen, and you should get on a list." And I remember my brother was in the room, and he's looking at me like, and he said, I remember they said, you may have a couple years to live. That's it.
Wow.
And so I'm like, wow, like she's dictating how long I have to live?
Yeah.
I don't think so. But so I listened to the doctors because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. I got on the list. I started doing the testing for the list. And then I was like, a couple of weeks later, I got out of the hospital. I was back in the gym. I was boxing with my friend. You know, like I was hitting the speed bag 6 rounds at a time, not really getting that winded. I'm 22 years old, you know, 21. Yeah. And then I said, you know what, Doc, I'm not ready yet. You know, I took myself off from the testing. I stopped it. And I lived for 13 more years, you know, with a under 25% lung function.
Wow.
Which really is, I don't know anyone, and I speak to a lot of people with CF, that's done that, you know. Most people, like, by 30%, they're on oxygen.
But that's also probably because of how you grew up, very
right.
active.
That's what it is, exactly.
So you went based off of how you felt.
How I felt, because, like, you know, I mean, it's a test, you know. Like, I felt like I was okay. I felt like I could live my life the way I was. I was responsible. I was taking my nebulizer treatments and my physiotherapy 3 times a day. Obviously, that helped me spit out all that mucus, because you got to get that mucus out. Because if it stays in, let's say I would miss one treatment, I would be so congested that it could cause infection. And then what was really difficult as time went by was hemoptysis. Like, that was something, spitting blood. Mm-hmm. It's called hemoptysis. So when your lungs get so scarred and you're coughing so much from the therapy, it can cause, like, blood vessels to burst or just, like, in bleeding interiorly in your lungs. So that was a thing I dealt with a lot, you know.
So, and then we fast forward to 13 years.
Yeah.
And then your lung capacity, your efficiency drops even more.
Right. So, 13 years later, I'm 33, 34. Well, it started really within 32. Like I said, my hemoptysis was just horrific. Mm. There was an event where I was in the middle of the night, maybe 2 a.m. I just started coughing, and I don't want to talk about it too much.
Yeah,
I know we're sticking to something positive, but it was just, it looked like a bloodbath. I mean, I was just puking blood. Went to the hospital. It was just really bad. And so that's when I started thinking about, man, I gotta get on the list here, you know. And then I would stop, and I would feel a little bit better. So I would, you know, gain confidence. But then my lung function dropped to 10%, you know, 15 to 10%, that range for a while. And I remember catching, like, a really bad cold, and I was hospitalized. ended up like 30 days in ICU. And then there were, I'm like, yeah, doc, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. You know, I was on, at that point, I was on oxygen 24/7. It was hard for me to walk from like one room to the other without being so out of breath. Like,
wow,
my heart rate was so high.
When you say you're on oxygen 24/7, what does that mean?
So you have like a nasal cannula,
yeah,
and you put it on your nose, and it's connected to an oxygen tank.
So Nick, you went there before trying to get on a list for a transplant?
Where?
You were doing the oxygen prior?
Yeah. Typically, most people are on oxygen by the time they're about to get listed.
Got it.
You know, and that's what I was saying to myself. I said, I'm going to get listed when I'm relying on oxygen all the time. You know?
Gotcha.
And I even relied on oxygen. It started like at night only, because when you lay down, it's harder to breathe.
Yeah.
Then it was like when I was doing late at night and physical activity. And there wasn't a moment where like I would stop being somewhat active, even if I could barely walk. If I'm home and I'm taking my nebulizer treatments, I'm at least doing the dumbbells, you know?
Okay.
Like, I always tried to do as much as I could because I knew the next step was transplant.
Yeah.
And a transplant means you got to, like, this is the biggest battle of your life, you know? And you have to, your body, you have to prepare your mind, most importantly, and then your body as best as you can. You have to be strong. Like, there are so many rules and regulations to being on the list, you know? I mean, you have to have a certain BMI, you have to have a certain weight, you have to have your diabetes in control. And, I mean, you're sick, your lungs are shot, so that's difficult to do.
Yeah.
And by the way, you're losing calories just by breathing and coughing. So it was so hard to maintain your weight because it also affects your digestive system,
mm-hmm.
Cystic fibrosis. So a lot of people with CF are on enzymes all the time. I take enzymes when I eat.
So you're 34 years old. You're now on the list.
Yeah.
What was that like? Like, it's a waiting game, right?
Right. It's a waiting game. So I go to USC Hospital.
And when you're on a list, it's for lung transplant,
right. So I go to USC Hospital, but I wanted to get listed at Stanford.
Because they
have a better reputation with the lung transplant. And by the way, USC, they're like family, and I love them.
Okay.
They're an amazing hospital. But, you know, I followed in the footsteps of a few friends of mine,
mm-hmm.
my buddy Patrick and my buddy Dominic. You know, they both got transplanted over there. So I saw how well they did, and I said, yeah, I want to do it there,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Understood.
And yeah. But before that, because I knew how challenging it was going to be financially speaking, and my wife and I, at the time, we had to literally raise money. We had to fundraise. I mean, you have to be prepared because this is it's not just like you get out of the hospital, you can go back home. It can be like a 9-month process of rehab, you know. So I knew, number one, we had to relocate to the most expensive place in the country, Silicon Valley, by Stanford. And number two, we weren't going to be working. And my life was going to be focused on exercise, on rehab, you know, on doing better.
So how did you do that?
Well, we fundraised. And we did it. We had like, I mean, I'm so lucky, and this is why I do what I do now. I'm so lucky because I have so many people to help me. A family, huge family.
Mm-hmm.
We had a fundraiser in Chicago. We had a fundraiser in L.A., my buddy Dan, who's the secretary of my nonprofit now, he has a Muay Thai gym. They did a fundraiser there. My family in Italy, the whole town came together. I mean, this is like, they are not well. They don't have a lot of money there. And they did a huge soccer tournament. Firemen, policemen, the two banks, and my cousins, who have like a social group, they started it all. They got involved, like all these political people involved, and they had like a huge tournament. And they raised like $12,000.
Wow.
And in Italy, that's like big time, dude.
Yeah.
That's big time. So, and I hadn't been back in since 1999.
Wow.
So it was like a dream of mine. All those people, all that positive energy they were putting, all those prayers, and I'm a big believer in the power of prayer, because
mm-hmm.
that's energy being put out there towards one cause.
Yeah.
And that's like a synergy that you feel, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I felt that. I felt that, and it made me want to fight harder, you know?
That night, you get is that when you found out about the transplant?
Well, I first got a false alarm call.
Okay, what is a false alarm
call? So it's a dry run, they call it. I was hospitalized right after August 4th. I went up to Stanford, I did the testing, I got listed the 13th of August, pretty fast. Got hospitalized the next day because I had really bad infection. The 25th of August, I get my first call. I'm excited, I'm like going crazy, wow, I can't believe this. And I have flown to Stanford, emergency. I get there, I'm on the operating table. They put me to sleep, basically. And I get woken up 4 hours later, and I'm like, what's going on? You know, I'm thinking it's the next day, I've got new lungs, and I still feel kind of crappy.
Yeah.
And I don't have a tube down my throat, because that's what they got to do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what happened? And they're like, the lungs from the cadaver, from the donor, they had nodules on them. So could you imagine, like, the emotional letdown?
Wow.
It's such a roller coaster of emotions, because you're ready. Like, I was ready. I was crying that day. I was so happy. I'm like, this is happening. Thank God. I get there, and then now nothing. Now my family, my parents actually flew in. They were there at the waiting room. They just, as I was getting out, they just showed up. And my wife was waiting in the waiting room, like, and she was told, and it was just devastating. Wow. We had nobody there.
I can only imagine.
We knew nobody. We had no place to live. And the doctor's like, you got to stay around because you're really sick, and you're going to get a call soon. So we had to stay in an extended stay for 2 months until we got the real call. Which
you didn't know how long that extended stay
was. I had no idea, man. We got then right a week before I got the real call, we moved into an apartment. You know how much that apartment was for a one bedroom? $3,500.
Yeah.
And that was a reasonable one. So yeah. We had to get furniture. I mean, you know, all utilities, and the furniture was included. I mean, that's like actually reasonable. And it was like a little bit further out of Palo Alto because couldn't touch Palo Alto.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But thank God, I got so much help.
So then you get the call.
I get the call October 17th, 2015. And it was a day I'll never forget. I mean, it was 3 o'clock in the morning, roughly. I got a call. The doctor says, we have your lungs. I said, what? Wow. I'm ready, you know. And he's like, you want them? Of course I want them. So I said goodbye to my dog, Dice. Gave him a big hug. We went flying to the hospital. And it was the same day my family in Chicago was holding the big fundraiser. You know, we had like 300 people in a banquet hall.
Wow.
And it was the same day, same time. And believe it or not, that my wife was at the time, my wife, she was, you know, calling in and on the board, you know, like Skyping in, whatever, and giving updates, you know. So could you imagine the energy in that room was like, they were all like hopeful and like praying, and it was just it was such an amazing moment, you know.
When you got the call, time is of the essence, right?
Yeah, right, time is of the essence.
How quickly do you have to?
You do have like 6-7 hours sometimes,
okay.
But they want you in there like within
as
a couple
soon as
hours
possible,
because you got to prep. You got to prep your body. They got to shave you. They got to do all these different things. They got to give you an IV, arterial line. You know, they got to talk to you about what they're going to do. There's the anesthesiologist comes in. It's a whole process.
Where are you at mentally at this time?
You know what? The second time, I was so, like, chill. The first time, I was super excited. I was exhausted with emotions when I found out it was bad. So I didn't want to go into it that way. I was like, you know what? This could be another dry run. And I learned from the first time. So it was kind of like a dress rehearsal for an actor,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just went in there, just chill. I was like, you know what? It could be. It might be. Hopefully it is. But I didn't want to overreact. I didn't want to tell my parents right away because it's hard for your loved ones too, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone's fighting this. It's not just you. You have so much support. They're in this too, you know.
Yeah.
But thank God they said the lungs are a go. By the time I had my operation, I think it was like 11 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine, I got the call at 3, and I got like operated on like starting around 11-ish.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, tell me what it's like mentally. I've never received any organs.
Right.
Tell me what it's like for you mentally, or for someone who may be going through it, to receive organs.
See,
is there a type of guilt?
And part of the reason I started this.
Go ahead.
The documentary.
Yeah.
I started a documentary called "Fight Like a Boss."
Yes, sir.
And it follows my whole journey. Everything I'm telling you about is in this film. You know, and I said to myself before I started, okay, I'm gonna go through this. Everything I do, I give 100%. You know, I'm passionate about what I do in life. And I said, but if I die, I want to leave something positive, mm-hmm, for the world to see, and I want to raise awareness for these causes that a lot of people don't know about, cystic fibrosis. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are not organ donors,
right,
which is shocking to me. You know, like,
right,
what do you need your organs for? You know, and I know someone sacrificed, made that unselfish decision to give their organs, and although I celebrate October 17th every year now, I know somewhere in this world there's a family that's mourning,
right,
that day,
yeah,
and is probably at the cemetery looking at their loved ones.
Very powerful.
And so you have to keep that in mind no matter what you do in life. You have to like, for me, I can't forget that.
Yeah.
So I have to, every decision I make, has to be with that in mind, you know. And that's why I want to help people.
Did you ever consider trying to, or I assume maybe you don't even have that option to reach out to that family, or?
Yes, there is that option.
There is that
After
option.
6 months, you can reach out. You write a letter, and there are so many rules. This is one of the things I really don't like, but. And I understand, though, because the family's mourning.
Yeah.
Sometimes the family doesn't want to get involved, you know, with meeting the family. And you write a letter after 6 months, but you can't put your name. You can't put the where you were transplanted. You can't put anything about religion or God. You can't put there's so many rules.
Right.
So basically my letter was stripped down so much because, you know, I said, I'm very passionate. So my letter was like 3 pages. I was like, I think there were tears all over it.
Yeah.
And then, like, I gave it to my social worker, and it was just like one page. I'm like, well, come on. You know, like, that's not as emotional as I wanted it, you know?
Right.
Because I want them to know
how important it is
and what their daughter, I know it's a girl, that's all I know. And I know she was around my age, a little younger than me.
Yeah.
That's all I know. Like, you know, like, that's my dream, like, to meet the family, you know?
Yeah.
And I want to, I mean, you're also powerful. Curious because you want to know, like, who's in, you know, whose lungs do you have?
Is that an option for the giver to say if they want to to meet?
Yeah. So you send a letter, the social worker gives it to, I think it's some program that sends it to the donor. There's a registry, you know. UNOS. And I'm also an UNOS ambassador, actually. A United Network Organ Sharing. So they get it, and then they send it to the family. But I don't know if the family received it, you know.
Yeah.
So I've been told to keep writing. So that's what I'm going to do, you know.
But that six-month period is a decision on the giver's side.
Yeah, so you give it, and then it's up to them whether or not they want to reach out to you.
Got it.
I haven't gotten reached out to.
And then you spent 19 days recovering.
Right. So the recovery was no joke. I mean, you know, first of all, they literally saw your sternum in half. My sternum is being held by wires, you know. So they rip your ribs apart. And they get in, they take out the old lungs, and they put the new ones in, you know. And the recovery, because they're gonna, you have to be immune suppressed for the rest of your life. So in the beginning, you're on a drip, IV drip of steroids, high steroids, and steroid prednisone is so powerful it can really affect a lot of it has a lot of side effects, depression, anxiety, you know, like you can get like real like angry. So imagine being 1,000 milligrams or whatever it is. It's an insane level. So I started, like, first 2 days, it was really good. I sat up within 12 hours. Mm. I walked less than 24 hours. I took my first 2-3 steps, which was the hardest thing I've ever did in my life. And then, from then down, for, like, the 7 days after that, I don't remember anything. I couldn't sleep. Then psych was coming in. They were giving me sleep meds, psych meds, this, that. And one thing after another, I just lost my mind. I started hallucinating. I was like hallucinating crazy things, funny things too, and that's what I remember, the hallucinations.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the family around me remembers how I was, you know. And we caught that in the documentary too, which is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's parts of that where you're like, you know, where you'll see me like kind of talking and nobody's there, you know. And
Did you want to say something?
No, just I have a question about the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you want to shoot the documentary, and were there any thoughts or did you question yourself whether you wanted to do it or, because it's personal.
Right. Yeah, of course. Very personal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no hiding anything, though, you know. For a long time, a lot of people didn't even know I had CF. Some people didn't. Not that I hid it. I was always open about it. I even did speeches for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation back in Chicago. I was involved with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. You know, I did a lot of speaking. So people knew, but this is as open as it gets. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I was reluctant. In a certain aspect, I was reluctant. But then you think about the bigger picture of things, and you're like, you know what? It's not just about me. It's about other people. This is a bigger thing than just me, you know? So I got to put my whatever aside and go forward with something like this because it's huge. I mean, like, it could help a lot of people. Basically, somebody watches this documentary, and this is my ultimate goal, and says, you know what? Wow, this guy's doing great things with his life. And we can do that for others by just being an organ donor.
Yeah.
You know? And there was one day when my producers, by the way, big shout out to Daniel Pinheiros and Jenny Marrero, the director and producers that took this project on 100%. They were really, really into it. And I mean, I love them. Like, they were so amazing. We became so close. So we would. I said, let's go, when they came up to San Francisco one day, let's go to the bridge, San Francisco Bridge, and just talk to tourists. Let's ask if they know what CF is, and let's ask if they're organ donors. Maybe 2 out of 10 knew what CF was, cystic fibrosis was. Maybe 4 out of 10 were organ donors.
Yeah.
It's sad.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, come on, dude. Like, yeah. I mean, it's sad. Like, this is a message that needs to be told.
How long did it take you to get back to working out? Or I should say this, how long did it take you to kind of resemble your old life?
Yeah. Within a month, I went in the gym. We got an apartment where the gym that was there was really nice, and there was nobody ever there. Because I'm, you know, you're immune suppressed, so you have to be careful around sick people.
Okay.
For a while, I was wearing a mask everywhere I went.
Is that forever?
You're always immune suppressed, yeah. I'm on immune suppressants every day of my life. I'm on steroids. Now it's only 5 milligrams, okay, which is tolerable.
Yeah.
Every day of my life, you know. So I always have to be careful. I can't be around sick people.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you noticed, I shook hands. I did sanitize my hands right away. Okay. Like, I'm very careful. I wash my hands all the time.
So do you fist bump?
I do fist bump.
Okay.
I do that. I do mostly, but, like, you know what? I'm at a point, like, almost 3 years out now, where I'll shake someone's hand and I'll, like, have the sanitizer with me, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, going on a plane or in a hospital, I wear a mask, public transportation.
Yeah.
But you were talking about fitness. Within a month, I went to the gym and I started doing, and I was able, I realized now I'm able to do things I have never done in my life.
Wow.
I mean, if you can imagine being in a situation where every breath hurt, every breath I took was difficult. That was a job, a strenuous job. And then you can run or jog, or I went to Muay Thai, and I'm boxing again, and not getting tired. It's an unbelievable thing, and you feel that. You know?
At what point was it that every breath was hurting?
I mean, probably, especially the last 5 years before transplant, but definitely the last two. Like, it was hard. Like, I had a 10% lung function. It's insane.
That is.
My small airways were only 5%. My small airways now are over 200%. It's like night and day.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky. And by the way, it's not like that with every case. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people that are struggling. You know, I have I started a group of our friends that had transplant around the same time as me, and some of them are on the list to get a second transplant right now.
Right.
And they had it like within days of me. You know, I'm not going to say anyone's name, but always in my heart, and I always think about them. You know, and it's. Yeah. And you have to keep that in mind, too, when you go on.
Is it based off of the surgery that was
rejection.
Performed? Or
no,
is it based off of the lungs that they received?
Exactly. It's really luck.
It's,
you know,
yeah.
It's luck.
Yeah.
You know, it's your body reject your lungs or not.
Gotcha.
There are other factors, of course. Mm-hmm. I feel like, I am very responsible with what I do, and I exercise a lot. Not that they're not, but, you know, I mean, if you are resilient and you're exercising, you know, that obviously helps. And you're positive. I think that helps.
Would you say the medical field is making progress?
Oh, my God. Like, right now, people that are born with CF, they're living in their 60s and 70s. I know people,
wow.
I mean, 50s, 60s, 70s, no problem. And right now, life expectancy is in the higher 30s, you know, the upper 30s, lower 40s. But that's because there's people like us that are from the 80s and 70s still that are, you know, dying younger, you know, because they didn't get that chance to be on these new medications that are coming up.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's some great things. I waited. That's one of the reasons I didn't get on the list, because I was waiting for a particular drug that was supposed to be life-changing. And I got that drug. It's called Kalydeco. I got that drug maybe a month before I got listed. But my lung function was so low that drug did the opposite. It made it worse for me.
Mm.
And, you know, that's a great... These drugs that are coming out now, they're good for, like, people that are in the 30, 40 percentile lung function, not for ones that are, like, already, like, really struggling, you know.
So you have Fight Like a Boss,
yep,
documentary.
Mm-hmm. And we just won at the film festival last week, two festivals, Best of Fest and Best Documentary.
It's two awards already.
Two awards, man. I was so ecstatic.
That's got to make you feel good.
Oh, man. It confirms that the message is big, you know?
Yeah.
And that one of them was an audience award, so that's cool.
That's the best kind of award.
Yeah. And then the other one was voted by the judges. So, you know, I mean, to have them both at the same weekend, First Glance Film Festival, Hollywood Screening Film Festival, it was just extraordinary.
Instagram and Facebook for your documentary is Fight Like a Boss Film.
Right.
So for anyone out there who wants to look it up or see things, Fight Like a Boss Film, Instagram, Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to talk about your foundation.
Yeah.
Because your whole situation inspired you to come up with a foundation.
Right.
Talk to us about that.
Yes. I started and I'm always sticking with that boss theme, because you know, like, I just like the idea, you know, you're being a boss of your own life and don't let anyone else or anything dictate it. The Breathe Like a Boss Foundation. So we just got our 501c in the beginning of December.
Congratulations.
Thank you, man. That's great. And it's, I'm really excited. My buddy Dan and my brother, they're on the board. And Dan trains in Muay Thai and boxing. Mm-hmm. And so the whole idea is, for me, exercise, fitness is what kept me alive mm-hmm. for so long. We spoke about that. So I feel like, and there's, unfortunately, people with CF and cystic fibrosis, they're on disability. They can't afford certain, you know, gyms or fitness. So we pay for anything extracurricular or exercise equipment for their home that'll benefit them cardiovascularly and mentally, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
because,
mm-hmm.
you know, you feel great when you go to a gym, you feel, and you've produced, you know, you've done something and you could see like your body's getting stronger and it's a mental thing, you know, also, you know, and that's what's kept me alive is yeah. fitness and thanks to my parents.
That's beautiful, man. Yeah. Todd, Joe, did you guys have
any? I have a couple questions. Yeah. First question, you were, when you were younger and knowing how you could become sick so quickly or whatever, it seems like the opposite. As a parent, I would be like trying to nurture you and yeah. be like, stay indoors mm-hmm. and don't go outside. So I have to commend yeah. your parents in that way and you as well in terms of being like, no, I'm going to go outside. I'm going to, yeah. you know, yeah. play sports. I'm going to yeah. do all these things when the natural reaction would be, let's baby him
yeah.
and let's shelter him
right.
and make, because especially hearing about, oh, well, when your parents hear about the life expectancy,
yeah.
you know, they're really thinking,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, I mean, there was some babying, you know, we're from Italian.
Well, you're also the youngest.
I'm a mama's boy and my grandma.
Yeah, you're the youngest of three,
exactly.
too. So,
there's a lot of great foods, great, you know, yeah. and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, there's certain, like I said, there's certain aspects of life with CF that you can't do like normal people.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to do everything as possible. And they wanted to push that on me, you know?
Yeah.
Like anything my brothers did, like soccer, tennis, basketball, mm-hmm. you know, sports, guitar lessons, whatever, anything, they included me in it.
Yeah.
It wasn't something right. like they said, no, he can't go because of that.
Yeah.
You know?
That's commendable.
Yeah.
That's
and that helps, like I said, mentally speaking, too. You grow up that way and you say, well, if I was able to do that as a kid, why can't I do it now, you know?
Yeah. And then, because I have thoughts about doctors in terms of like how, because you said that certain doctors and nurses, they tell you certain things like, well, you're going to live to this.
Yeah.
Or what's your I have different viewpoints
yeah.
on that too, but what's your thoughts of that, like in terms of, because not everyone's so defiant,
right.
you know, you could take it one way or another. You could take it to the way where you're like, no, they don't know what they're talking
yeah.
about. I'm going to prove them wrong.
Right.
Or you could take it as a death sentence.
Definitely.
And say that I can only live this amount
yeah,
of time.
That's right.
And so,
well,
it's a scary scenario.
It's very scary, and you're right. It depends on how you handle it, and I don't like that. Like
yeah.
I don't like that they tell you, because they're not God. They don't know.
Yeah.
You know, nobody knows. You know, like, how long you're gonna live or how much fight you have.
Yeah.
In you know, and you're right. Sometimes they do that, and I talked to a lot of people with CF now,
mm-hmm.
and I try to mentor them. Like if they're
mm-hmm.
getting, and I see that. Like I yeah. see that in them. Like, oh, I mean, I've just got on oxygen. Well, I mean, how do you feel, though? Forget about the numbers.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Like, I mean, what are you able to do
mm-hmm.
every day? Are you able to do anything different? Are you feeling strong still? You know, I think you got to go more by that, too.
Yeah. Yeah, because we had a friend, Majestic, basically,
uh-huh.
who was in the hospital, and the doctors told him that he had X amount of time to live, and he struggled with that.
Right.
And I don't want to get too personal, yeah. but it's just, you know, talking to him, it was like I was always trying to inspire him,
yeah.
but it's like they kept reversing that in a way by saying,
yeah.
so that was,
yeah, that's sad.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. I think as doctors, if we have doctors and nurses listening, positivity does
right.
help. Even.
And by the way, not all doctors are like that.
No,
both types.
Yes.
You know? I've come across those that are extremely pessimistic, and I've come across those that were like, I had a doctor, I was in ICU, and I was going to get married
mm-hmm.
in 1 month, and I caught the swine flu while in the hospital. I was going in for a tune-up. I said, I'm just going to go in for a tune-up so I can feel real strong. I was going to get married in Mexico, Puerto Vallarta,
mm-hmm.
and I caught the swine flu from a nurse in the hospital. Remember that was like 2007,
yeah.
whatever. And I ended up in ICU fighting for my life instead of planning the marriage. I got out of the hospital 3 days before my marriage, but I was depleted. I lost like right. 10 pounds. But I remember the ICU doctor. And he was like just a fellow. He wasn't even a doctor yet. He was training. he came in, he would literally hold my hand and pray with me almost on a daily basis. And I was like, dude, this is like, I never seen a doctor do that.
Yeah.
Dr. Yeboah, his name was.
That's great. Yeah,
he was from Nigeria. He was just a terrific doctor. I found out recently that where he is, I'd love to get a hold of him.
You should.
Hopefully he's listening.
Yeah.
Nick, you should. You got to get a hold.
Yeah. Well, I met someone who actually had him as a doctor, another CF patient, coincidentally, and I kept telling him, make sure you say hello for me. Because that was inspiring.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Nick, we have Fight Like a Boss, the film.
Yep.
And then we have Breathe Like a Boss, the foundation.
Yeah.
Real quick, where can we see this film?
Well, right now we're getting it in film festivals.
Okay.
We need distribution, basically.
Okay.
So we're looking for people who are interested in distributing the story, and then hopefully we can stream it on Netflix or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. That's what you get in these film festivals, and achieving awards, which is what we did, is big because then there's eyes on it, And hopefully things like this, can bring awareness, and then someone might be interested. You never know.
Well, give me a couple things you want people to know about cystic fibrosis.
Yeah. In what sense? Like, how?
Just in general. What's the three takeaways you want people to understand about cystic? Yeah.
Like, if I was talking to someone with CF, or someone who doesn't know anything about it.
Who doesn't know anything about it.
Well, cystic fibrosis, I think it's... there's so many new things coming out, and the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation is involved in all of that. So I feel like it's a very important to know about it and to get involved or donate to Cystic Fibrosis Foundation as well, because they're the ones who correlate all the stuff. But it's a genetic condition that again affects the lungs predominantly. People with CF, they don't look sick. That's one thing I would say. But how many times did I receive the "Oh my God, you look so healthy"? Yeah, but I'm dying inside. I look healthy, but it was a struggle, and it's an invisible disease. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be one of it.
Okay.
And then I say exercise is very important, I always go back to that. I think because it's always affecting your lungs mostly. And it doesn't all, and another thing with CF is there are so many different mutations. There's 30, 40, maybe more of different mutations of the disease. And some people don't get diagnosed until they're teens.
Wow.
Believe it or not. They live normal, and then all of a sudden they're sick, and they always thought they had asthma, I know a girl who actually her family has a foundation called the Living Breath Foundation. They helped me out a lot. They donate to people that are, struggling financially with CF. And she had a transplant 11 days after me.
Wow.
And she didn't even know she had CF until she was, 14, 15.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was cool. That's an interesting fact, too.
Yeah, I know this is a continuous fight, but I've heard you also mention that some acquaintances or friends that have CF, and I want to know how instrumental they are. And also, my second part is, what would you say is 3 to 5 of your greatest contributors to helping you get through this?
Yeah, definitely. I would have to say, first of all, in terms of the people that I'm friends with that have cystic fibrosis. Like I said, there was a group of 5 or 6 of us that had transplant within 2 years. It's all at Stanford, and we're all good friends. Every one of them has been really useful in as a friend because, number one, we inspire each other. I even work out with one of them on a regular basis. And number two, the doctors don't, sometimes they just tell you something by the book. Mm-hmm. But, we ask each other, a lot of questions, and we're able to, feedback. And it's great to have that, And then we also inspire each other,
Community.
It's a community, And then as for the people that were instrumental, my parents for sure, my brothers, my Stephanie, my wife at the time, and just I would say family. And friends, my friends, my family's all in Chicago and in Italy, so my friends out here have become my family,
Okay, so we only have a couple more minutes, Nick. I just want to highlight everything. Fight Like a Boss film. We have the foundation, Breathe Like a Boss. Also, a big reason why you wanted to do this is to stress the importance of being an organ donor.
Right.
And for anyone out there who wants to be an organ donor, you can go to organdonor.gov and sign up to be a donor.
Yes,
and
thank you.
You may, you just may very well not knowingly impact someone's life and their family's life and give them a bright future. With that said, we like to close our show with 30 seconds of you saying what you want to say. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to try to nudge you to inspire someone who is going through an illness, maybe CF, maybe another type of illness, that that where it takes an incredible amount of strength to overcome or to get through.
Absolutely.
I want you to talk to them for 30 seconds.
So what I would say is don't lose faith. Don't give up. I mean, you know, sometimes you feel crappy or you're not feeling good and you just think you want to just give up. But stay resilient. I would say stay focused. Stay responsible. You know, write down small goals to achieve the big goal. You know, like today I'm going to walk, like someone would see, I'm going to walk 10 steps. Tomorrow I'm going to do 30 steps. Tomorrow, next day, 100 steps. And you're going to get there if you stay focused. You keep being resilient. And you know, like sometimes it's okay to like just take a breather, relax. And it's also okay to ask for help. You know, don't be afraid to ask for help. That's what I would say.
Beautiful.
That's wonderful.
All right. Well, Nick DeBreezy.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Power of Love show. And thanks for sharing your story. It was very inspirational. You're an amazing person.
Thanks, man. Thank you for having me.
So happy with your foundation and your film. Wishing you the best with both.
Thanks.
And just know we're here to support.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, guys.
Fight like a boss.
Yeah. Fight like a boss.
Fight like a boss. There you have it, Nick. Taj, Terrell, anything else you guys want to say before we close? Royal?
Good.
Nope. Okay. Well, that's our show. We will be back next Wednesday from 1 to 2. If you found our program helpful and can afford to do so, please go to DDJF and support the foundation in any way you can. And that's about it. We'll see you next week on the Power of Love show. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.